to Our Americas, the weekly report on Latin America and the Caribbean. I'm Mario Murillo. On today's program, we'll present excerpts of an exclusive interview with Puerto Rico's Governor Pedro Rosselló. He talked to us about his ongoing push for a plebiscite to be held on the island sometime this year, the state of the Puerto Rican economy, and the April 30th student strike protesting recent cuts at the University of Puerto Rico. Then we'll hear from Puerto Rican sociologist Emilio Pantojas, who will respond to some of Rosselló's remarks. Later in the program, we'll have an update on the struggle against California-based oil giant Occidental Petroleum, whose plans to drill for oil in Colombia threaten an entire indigenous nation. We'll hear from the chief of the Uwa people, along with a Colombian anthropologist who has been working closely on the case. All of this and more coming up next, but first, here are some stories making headlines this week in Our Americas.
With news for Our Americas, I'm Sarah Gill.
And I'm Walter Krockmal. Thousands of Guatemalans are grief-stricken after a Roman Catholic bishop known for defending human rights was found brutally murdered at his house on April 27th. Juan José Gerardi, the 75-year-old director of the Guatemala City Archdiocese Human Rights Office, had been beaten with a concrete block, crushing his skull. Gerardi had just presented a report 2 days earlier entitled Never Again in Guatemala, blaming the army and the civilian paramilitary groups it created for 80% of the 150,000 deaths and 50,000 disappearances in Guatemala's 36-year civil war. Leftist guerrillas were also cited in the document as responsible for 9% of those killed. The bishop's report was part of the Historical Memory Project, formed out of the 1996 peace accords as the first attempt to document completely who killed whom during the years of violence. The report reflected 3 years' work of collecting 6,000 testimonials of the survivors of the mostly civilian victims. Church and human rights groups assert that Gerardi was killed because the report blamed the army. The bishop was the first high-level church official to be assassinated since the signing of the 1996 peace accords, which ended the war.
In Mexico, President Ernesto Zedillo is preaching peace to the embattled state of Chiapas. Zedillo visited Ocosingo, a village on the edge of La Candona jungle and a rebel stronghold, on April 28th. Saying that violence would never resolve Chiapas's problem, Zedillo pledged to find a political solution, not a military one, to the four-year conflict. Zedillo also signed a 1.5 billion peso social development pact during the trip, his first visit to the area since a paramilitary death squad slaughtered 45 indigenous peasants in the highland village of Acteal last December. Zedillo's message and offers of help ring hollow to many who have borne the brunt of the civil war in Chiapas. The death squad is widely believed to have been funded by local officials of Zedillo's own ruling party, the Institutional Revolutionary Party, or PRI. More than 5,000 troops have been moved into the area, troops that the government insists are a part of a peacekeeping solution among supposedly warring Chiapanecos. And Zedillo's government has to date refused to comply with the indigenous rights and culture accords that it signed with the EZLN in February of 1996.
In related news, a new guerrilla group has emerged in Oaxaca, Mexico, vowing to fight the government's abuse of authority and for peace, justice, and democracy. Flyers posted in Oaxaca and signed by the National Indigenous Revolutionary Liberation Army, or EIRLN, announced the group's goal to fight in the name of those who had nothing. Oaxaca police are investigating and said they didn't know if the flyers were from a real armed group.
In Brazil, progressive Roman Catholic leaders and the Landless Rural Workers Group, or MST, are supporting the looting of supermarkets and food warehouses when no other food is available. Looting has broken out in 8 cities across Brazil's poor northeast, where nearly 10 million people are suffering from the worst drought in 15 years, brought on by the El Niño weather phenomenon. Brazilian President Fernando Henrique Cardoso lashed out against the church leaders and land activists as immoral for inciting the looting. He also announced plans to distribute 975,000 basic food baskets to help some 5 million people in the region, or about half of those affected by the drought. More than 350,000 people died from the drought in the northeast in the early 1980s, and malnutrition affects 40% of the region's children.
In other news from Brazil, President Cardoso's government and the World Bank are financing a program to protect an unprecedented 62 million acres of Amazon forest by the end of the century. The pledge, announced by Cardoso on April 29th, is the single largest forest conservation bid. It would account for half of the goal set jointly by the World Bank and the World Wildlife Fund to protect 10% of the world's remaining forests by the year 2000. But experts on Amazonian forests say that while the plan is significant, it will not substantially affect the rate of deforestation going on in the region, especially at the frontiers, because the root causes of deforestation have still not been addressed. Logging, land clearing, and recent forest fires have accelerated the rate of deforestation in this decade. To date, 130 million of the Amazon's 1 billion acres have been destroyed.
And those are some of the stories coming out of Latin America this week for Our Americas. I'm Sarah Gill.
And I'm Walter Krockmull.
Listening to Our Americas, the weekly report on Latin America and the Caribbean. I'm Mario Murillo. In other news this week, students of the University of Puerto Rico held a general strike on the island on April 30th to protest the $40 million budget cut spearheaded by pro-statehood Governor Pedro Rosselló. The strike included students and faculty who see the cuts as the latest attack against public education on the island. Rosselló, for his part, says the plan is designed to create equal opportunities for all Puerto Ricans, allowing them to choose between public and private education. The strike took place the day before massive May Day marches took place throughout the island, which were called by Puerto Rican unions to protest the governor's privatization plans. It was the latest in a series of actions taken against Rosselló, who has seen his popularity rating sink in recent months. Meanwhile, Rosselló, the president of the pro-statehood New Progressive Party, is continuing his lobbying efforts with the U.S. Senate, urging them to act on a measure that would allow Puerto Ricans to vote this year in a plebiscite to decide the future status of the island. The bill was passed by a narrow margin in the House of Representatives in early March, but the Senate has indicated that it will not be taking up the measure anytime soon. This has led some on the island to predict that the governor may call for an island-wide plebiscite that would not be sponsored by the U.S. Congress, which in the end may amount to nothing more than an expensive popularity contest between the three main options, statehood, independence, or continued commonwealth. I was in Puerto Rico the day before the student strike, and I spoke with Governor Rosselló in the governor's mansion, La Fortaleza, in Old San Juan. I first asked him how he felt now that the Senate was not in a hurry to pass the bill on the plebiscite.
Well, it doesn't change our plans. Congress in general, the Senate, the House, have traditionally been characterized by an unwillingness to engage different issues. And the reluctance that you mentioned in terms of the bill that would provide for self-determination for Puerto Rico, in a sense, is not much different than many other bills that go through Congress. And I must say that the same arguments were held for the process in the House of Representatives, and finally the House of Representatives did engage this process and has a bill that has been approved by the House. So it is natural that any bill that's being considered by the House or by the Senate goes through a process where some people are reluctant to engage in it. But I think that's the rule and not the exception. The exception is that some bill might be expeditiously taken care of by Congress. That is the exception. So we are in the midst of that process. We've gone through one major step, which is that the House of Representatives has approved a bill for the self-determination of Puerto Rico through a plebiscite. And we're now in the process of seeing this through in the Senate. The Senate has already taken some steps. For example, they were here on a fact-finding mission to Puerto Rico. They have started a round of hearings in Washington. And hopefully, by this summer sometime, we will be able to have the committee take a vote on the bill to allow Puerto Rico to have a plebiscite. So I think this is all part of the process. And I'm confident that we will have a plebiscite before year's end, 1998.
Mm-hmm. Now, if the Senate does not take those steps and does not move forward on the way you just outlined it, is there a plan, or what plan is there for a plebiscite to be held, perhaps another plebiscite that was along the lines of 1993, and perhaps hold that over as an alternative?
Well, you know, that question has been asked all along this process, and we've answered in the same way. When the process was in the House at the end of last year, I remember everybody said this bill was dead, that it was going nowhere. And our response to that was that it is an ongoing process, and that we are making our plans based on the approval by Congress and the signing by the president, and that's our plan.
Mm-hmm. Now, what is your sense? Obviously, there's a lot of criticism. The Congress members, Gutierrez and Velasquez, who are opposed to the Young bill, of course, they lost in the House. There's been criticism that the bill is kind of thinly veiled pro-statehood bill. What is your response to that, that this Young bill is actually just another way of rushing through statehood without really full compliance or real full participation on the part of the Puerto Rican people?
Well, I think there's a problem with logic in those arguments, because the same people are saying that Congress and the United States would not accept a Puerto Rican state. They say that Congress would oppose a 51st state for Puerto Rico. And how is it that a Congress that presumably would be opposed to statehood for Puerto Rico, on the other hand, is approving a bill that is favorable to statehood? You know, those people have to make up their mind. This is either a bill that's for statehood or it's a bill that's against statehood. You can't be both. And in essence, when people read the bill itself, they will find that this is a bill that provides for opportunities to choose between three different paths. It starts a movement. It is not the definitive decision. If people were to choose to go down the route of statehood, it opens up a period of approximately 10 years where, in three occasions, the President of the United States, the House of Representatives, the Senate, and the people of Puerto Rico have to be in agreement. That means there's 12 decisions along the path before Puerto Rico becomes a state. And so it's a path that is well thought out, with ample participation by all the bodies that have to be in agreement. So I think that you could not design a more just, a more open, a more deliberate decision than one that goes along a period of a decade and has 12 decisions in bodies that are very complex, and they all have to be in agreement for Puerto Rico to become a state. If that is something that some people think it's in favor of statehood, maybe that's their definition. I would not mind if that same process was applied to the other alternatives that are being put forth before the people of Puerto Rico.
Mm-hmm. Now, what would happen, how would you feel if the plebiscite were to be held and the people would continue to vote in favor as they did in 93 for, by a narrow margin, nevertheless, but nevertheless, they did vote in favor of the continued Commonwealth, or in this case, enhanced Commonwealth, or some form of that nature. What would be the response of Governor Rosselló?
The response is the same response that I always have given, and that is the people are the ones that decide. Whatever the people of Puerto Rico say, that's fine with me. And there's been times that the people of Puerto Rico have agreed with me. The people of Puerto Rico have given me two very strong mandates in 92 and again in 96 by a greater margin to do certain things in Puerto Rico. And I respect that when the people of Puerto Rico agree with things that I have proposed. On the other hand, there was a referendum in 94 where I submitted some changes to our Constitution. The people of Puerto Rico were not in agreement with that, and they voted against it. And I accept that because even though my view is one that's very strongly held in terms of what's best for the people of Puerto Rico, in the end result, it is the will of the people that matters here. And again, I will submit to any decision that the people of Puerto Rico eventually have. And I only hope and expect that the people of Puerto Rico will have all the appropriate information to take a decision. As long as that's included in the formula, I have no problems with that.
Pedro Rosselló is the governor of Puerto Rico. I spoke with him the day before a general student strike was held at the University of Puerto Rico, called to protest the governor's plans to gut $40 million from the university budget. I asked him to respond to the criticism that this was an attack against public education on the island.
What it's doing is trying to create a just playing field for every child in Puerto Rico. Right now, there's families in Puerto Rico that have the option of deciding for their children what their best educational options are. One of those families is my own family. I had the privilege of deciding where I wanted my children to go to school. But not all the families in Puerto Rico have that privilege. And what we're saying here is we have to create a fund. We have to separate and prioritize resources, funds, so that the government of Puerto Rico can eliminate or minimize the economic obstacle to education for the poorer families in Puerto Rico. I think it's not fair that a child, because he's born in a humble home, does not have the same opportunities as somebody that's born in a well-off family. And when we look at the changes that we're making here in Puerto Rico, we're trying to establish fundamental premises. It is the same premise that we've established in health, where health is being changed from that which was a privilege of some into what is essentially a right for everybody. In Puerto Rico, in health, everybody will have his health insurance for one system that will respond according to your health need and not according to how much money you have in your pocket. This is the same thing we're trying to establish in education. The same as health, we feel that this is a field where our society has the wherewithal, and also that in terms of justice, it's time that we do this so that the opportunities of children born through no fault of theirs in households that don't have the economic power to send them to the best schools according to the family decision, not to a decision that the governor or the secretary of education makes or the current administrator. No, let the family choose which are the best options. Let the support be not only for those students that are from the K to 12 level. Let's open up those opportunities for children in these preschool ages from 0 to 5. Let's open up the opportunities also for students, youth who finish their 12th grade and who should have ample opportunity to pursue post-secondary education, be it vocational or be it university. That's the basis of what we're proposing.
And you were listening to excerpts of a recent interview with Puerto Rico's pro-statehood governor, Pedro Rosselló, recorded in La Fortaleza in Old San Juan. We'll play more parts of the interview in future programs on Our Americas. And of course, you're listening to Our Americas, the weekly report on Latin America and the Caribbean. Joining us now to shed some light on the comments of Governor Rosselló is sociologist Emilio Pantojas of the University of Puerto Rico. Emilio is a regular contributor to Our Americas. Emilio, we talked with the governor about the cuts proposed at the university, which led to the student strike on April 30th. Why don't you give us, first of all, your take on and maybe a general assessment as to what happened on the day of the strike?
Well, the stoppage, the strike has been successful. All of the University of Puerto Rico colleges and university centers have been effectively closed down. The professors and the administrative workers have joined, and the administration took as a measure to preempt any disturbances, they allege, closed down the university, declare a recess from now until Tuesday. Classes will resume on Tuesday. That has created some problems because the students want to finish the semester. We're close to the semester. But the basic problem here is that the students and the unions and the professors are protesting because the governor has created or is proposing to create an agency that will centralize all of the government scholarships and it will become part of the executive branch. So the governor will give all of the public scholarships in the country, and that is something that people oppose. On top of that, the other problem is that the main loser in this reorganization of the scholarship system is the University of Puerto Rico system, which will lose about $40 million, that is roughly 7% of its budget.
Emilio Pantojas, one of the things that he said, and I spoke with Pedro Rosello earlier in the week, and he basically said that this is a way to expand opportunities for students throughout Puerto Rico, not only those who want to go to public schools, but those who want private education as well. What's your argument to that? It seems like he's pretty much set on his ways.
He's set on his ways, and he is known for being rather... I think the word is the concept is pig-headed or high-strung. He will go ahead with his proposal. The problem is that because he phrased it in such terms as to say that this is to benefit not only students in public university but private institutions as well, the unions have picked up on it and accused him of this being a further step in the privatization of most public services of the country. I don't think that this is the main point, although there is validity to that point. I think the problem is, on the one hand, that there's a big chunk taken out of the University of Puerto Rico, which is the public university, but it is the best university. The three university centers of UPR are by far the most competitive universities in the island. And also, I think the problem is that the students perceive, whether it is, no one really knows what's going to happen, but the students perceive, especially the University of Puerto Rico students, that they stand a chance, a big chance, to lose their scholarship to students who are going to private institutions. And in that sense, everyone is sort of jockeying for position, is trying to dig their heels on their position, because no one really knows how the government is going to use the new power that it will grab by centralizing all scholarships and by saying that those scholarships will go to any student that qualifies according to God knows which requirements, rather than to say these are allocated to this institution or to that institution, and therefore the qualification agency for grants are not the institutions of higher education but a government office. And people are very distrustful of government offices, especially the executive, being the qualifier of who is a good student or not. This can become political patronage. That's one of the fears that it's there.
Emilio Pantojas, some people have said that this is an example of Pedro Rosello's overall plan to make the island more attractive as a state, as the 51st state, as he pushes forward a plebiscite which doesn't seem to be going anywhere, at least in the U.S. Senate. What's your assessment of that? How do you feel about that that argument, that this is just the latest in a series of moves taken by the governor to make the island attractive as the 51st state?
To be honest with you, someone will have to explain the reasoning behind that to me, in the sense that I don't see how creating a government agency to give grants, to give scholarship to students, to be the qualifying agency, will make Puerto Rico more attractive. I don't see how it will improve education, in fact, and I don't see anything to gain but, I would say, political patronage. I don't think, however, that it is also a measure of privatization, as some people are arguing, because, after all, it is government patronage that will be distributed according to government preferences, unless an appropriate mechanism were to be in place. So in that sense, I think that what is happening is there is a confrontation brewing, a confrontation between public sector unions and the government, and they are sort of lumping everything together. They're throwing at Rosselló everything but the kitchen sink. And in that sense, I think that this is typical of the tenor of the debate. I think that the debate has lost focus. Everyone is setting their positions, and they are staring at each other, I should say, and see who blinks first. And that's the key element, who blinks first And I think they are heading towards a confrontation, the public sector unions and the executive, which will not be good for statehood, by the way.
Now, finally, Emilio Pantojas, maybe you can tell us your assessment. Again, talking to Rosselló earlier in the week, he had commented on the idea that since the Senate is not moving forward on the plebiscite, he seems to be optimistic, nonetheless, that one will be held this year. What's your assessment? What's your take on the situation right now vis-a-vis a possible plebiscite in 1998?
I think that if the governor is bent on it, he might force a plebiscite. I don't know what he will gain by it, because for the look of it, and this is something I predicted as early as last year, and I am not a prophet or anything like that, but just that the Young Bill wasn't going to pass. If the Young Bill does not pass, which is not a difficult thing to predict, because this is the way all bills for changing the Puerto Rico status have gone, if the Young Bill doesn't pass and there is not a plebiscite that is sanctioned by Congress with an agreement from Congress in terms of doing something about the result, the outcome of the plebiscite, then the plebiscite is just another exercise which is called in Puerto Rico, and I think accurately so, a beauty contest. That is, Puerto Rican voters go to the polls and they express publicly in a poll, rather expensive one by the way, which formula they prefer. So far, since 1967, when the first such beauty contest or plebiscite was held, the Commonwealth has always come on top. I don't see that would be very different. I think that the state numbers will be very strong, stronger than ever before. I have no doubt about that. But I don't think that they will win. But on the other hand, I think that before you have a plebiscite, you probably have a confrontation in the country. I think that the unions are going to take to the streets. Tomorrow is May Day, and you're going to see a rather substantial demonstration by the unions, especially the public sector unions, against privatization, against the economic reform policies of Rosselló. The situation of the country on employment is growing rather fastly, to a large extent because of the repeal of Section 936 last year, which was spearheaded by Rosselló and his government, and people are upset. There is a widespread discontent with the government of Rosselló.
Sociologist Emilio Pantojas is a professor at the University of Puerto Rico in San Juan in Río Piedras. He's a regular contributor to Our Americas. And you're listening to Our Americas, the weekly report on Latin America and the Caribbean. Our Americas is produced at the studios of WBAI Pacifica Radio in cooperation with NACLA, the North American Congress on Latin America. NACLA publishes a bi-monthly journal, Report on the Americas. For more information, you can call NACLA at 212-870-3146. That's 870-3146. And if you have any questions or comments for us, you can send us an email at mmcompa@igc.org. That's mmcompa@igc.org. I'm Mario Murillo. Stay with us. Thank you.